Unzabditi. Danava. Demons. Vatsam. The calf. Praladam. Pralad Maharaj. Asura. Demon. Rishabham. The chief. Vidhaya. Making. Aduduhan. They milked out. Chiram. Milk. Aya. Iron. Patre. In a pot. Sura. Liquor. Asavam. Fermented liquids. Like beer. Translation. The sons of Diti and the demons transform Pralad Maharaj, who was born in an Asura family, into a calf. And they extracted various kinds of liquor and beer, which they put into a pot made of iron. Purport. The demons also have their own type of beverage in the form of liquors and beers. Just as the demigods use somarus for their drinking purposes. The demons born of Diti take great pleasure in drinking wine and beer. Even today, people of demoniac nature are very much addicted to liquor and beer. The name of Pralad Maharaj is very significant in this connection, because Pralad Maharaj was born in a family of demons as the son of Hiranyakashipu. By his mercy, the demons were and still are able to have their drinks in the form of wine and beer. The word aya, iron, is very significant. Whereas the nectarian soma was put into a golden pot, the liquors and beers were put into an iron pot. Because the liquor and beer are inferior, they are placed in an iron pot. And because somaras is superior, it is placed in a golden pot. Om Jnana Chirmanandasya Gananjana Salakaya Chakshun Militang Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasavi Gaura Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. The name of Pralad Maharaj is very significant in this connection. Yes, you would wonder, what is a Mahajan like Pralad Maharaj doing in circumstances like this? He's transformed into a calf, and the demons extract various types of liquors and beer, which they put into a pot made of iron. Well, first of all, you have to ask, what is a Mahajan like Pralad Maharaj doing in the dynasty of the demons? Obviously, Krishna put him there for a reason. Similarly, there is liquor and beer in this cosmic manifestation for a reason. People want to forget. We discussed this the other day. If you ever have plans of going back to material life, please be aware of what you're signing up for once again. You are signing up for passion and ignorance. Passion, as you all know, intense hankerings and desires for which you're willing to struggle and work so hard to try and satiate. And then, ignorance. You want to forget all the troubles, all the tribulations, and just have pure happiness, thanks to the liquors, beers, drugs, and intoxication. So this is what you'll sign up for once again. Re-enlist. Just like the armed forces are always trying to get people to re-enlist, hold on to their manpower and their woman power. So similarly, material nature is always inviting you, come back, re-enlist. Here are the benefits. What are those benefits? Forgetfulness and passion. That's what your life will be all about. You'll be willing to struggle so hard to achieve temporary goals. You'll voluntarily do that under the name of self-fulfillment, creativity, personal expansion, knowing yourself. You speak all those words, but what do you end up doing? toiling so hard under great duress, going through great frustrations, tolerating so many things, just so you can achieve your temporary goals. You're motivated by your temporary desires, which will change when the body changes. And because the pressure is so great, you have to become intoxicated. You can't imagine material life without intoxication. Even in the USA during the times of the Prohibition in the early part of the 20th century. Indeed, alcohol was banned for a while. And looking back at that period, mundane scholars say, it was just impossible for people to exist. It was actually cruel. People could, it's like you took air away from them. And therefore, people went to such great extents how to illegally acquire alcohol. Now, it is understood, intoxication is a necessary part of life. This is completely accepted in the civilization of the demons. You must forget so that you can energize yourself for another struggle in material existence. What's Prahlad Maharaj doing with this? Well, as we said, he's born in the dynasty of demons by Krishna's arrangement. He's participating in Krishna's plan. It's not that Prahlad Maharaj is taking up this lifestyle of liquors and beer and wine, but he understands that through material nature, Krishna arranges that everyone can have what they want and experience the result. Sometimes people say, if God didn't want us to have these things, then why did he put them here? If he didn't want us to have heaps of sex life, why is it happening all around? If he didn't want us to have alcohol, wine, liquor, drugs, why are they here? Why are they in nature? They forget to understand that Krishna has given the instruction book for how to live in material nature. Everyone accepts everything from nature, which is good for their sense gratification, but they don't accept the instruction book. That's also there. That's also coming from Krishna. Similarly, we should understand how impartial the Supreme Personality of Godhead is. This is essential for our becoming strong as we march toward the goal of prayojana, love of Krishna. We first have to accept that Krishna is indeed equal to everyone. Once we fully accept that point, we will bear no grudges toward Krishna. Why did you put me in this world? Why did this happen to me? Why did that happen to me? As we heard Srila Prabhupada explain yesterday in the verse by Queen Kunti, Samam Charitam Sarvatra. The Lord's mercy is equally distributed everywhere. Just like the sunshine is shining everywhere. Everyone has access to the sun in terms of light and heat. But it's your business, it's your own personal thing, if you go outside with sunglasses on and a big hat to protect yourself from the sun. That's your thing. Don't blame it on the sun. The sun is shining everywhere. The sun is giving its mercy everywhere, but you decide how you're going to interact with the sun. Therefore, you cannot blame Krishna for the actions and reactions of material nature that you experience. Krishna provides the system, but you generate your own experiences as you interact with that system. In other words, the Lord provides you with the rope, and you can either hang yourself with it or elevate yourself with it, lift yourself up with it. But you cannot blame the Supreme Personality of Godhead for the distresses of this world, nor can you blame him for the happiness of this world. Once we have our conscience clear of blaming Krishna for the disturbances encountered in material life, then we can proceed with a humble heart toward the goal of love of God. It's very important to have this heart without lumps in it. Because in the course of living in this world, You experience misunderstandings. You experience mistreatment. You experience frustrations, unfulfilled desires. And so therefore, consciously or not, these lumps in the heart can develop. We could all think right now of various desires we may have right now that are not being fulfilled. I want to be healthy. Why can't I be healthy? I want a nice husband. Why can't I have a nice husband? I want a nice wife. Or I just want this. We're quite famous for our presenting propositions to the Supreme Lord. If you just give me this, then I'll be peaceful in doing your service. It's in your self-interest to give me what I want, because then I'm going to be enthusiastic, you know? I'm going to be enthusiastic in service. All you have to do, Krishna, is give me this. That's all I'm asking for. What's the big deal? Everyone else has it. So in this way, we try to twist Krishna's arm. Now, when those desires aren't fulfilled to our satisfaction, and this is another point, whoever told you it's the job of the material world to fulfill your desires to your satisfaction? Where did you ever hear that from? But we have this idea in our mind. That is because of conditioning. Contact with the material energy produces hallucinations in the mind. It's not an innocent thing to just interact with material nature, just like you're going for a walk, ambling through the forest, whatever. No. Interacting with material nature produces hallucinations. You get the dream of material happiness, that my hopes will be fulfilled. You know, when I think about it, my desires are very legitimate. When I think about it, you know, I don't want much. When I think about it, you know, I'm actually quite modest about my desires. Therefore, I'm sure they'll be fulfilled. Yeah, my desires look good to me. And you find some friends who agree with you. Yeah, your desires are all right. Yeah, good on you. Yeah. And then, when the inevitable happens, you're frustrated. First of all, you get frustrated because you often don't get what you want. But what's even worse is when you do get what you want, you find out it doesn't satisfy you. This really produces anger and frustration. You definitely then have to reach for intoxication. It's highly embarrassing to get what you want and then realize it doesn't make you happy. You become bitter in your heart. The only way you can live through this bitterness and anger is to become intoxicated. Forget. So these lumps in the heart are formed because of frustrated desire. Unconsciously, we may even blame Krishna. Krishna, you're supposed to be God. If you know what's good for you, why don't you just give me what I want? Everything looks so plain and clear to me. I've consulted other devotees who also have grudges with you, and they agree with me. I mean, they're part of the movement too. Naturally, I didn't go talk to, you know, the temple president or the senior Vaishnavs here at New Dwarka. I mean, you know, they'll just give me the party line, you know, that the Lord is equal to everyone, and all the distress I'm going through is Krishna trying to bring me closer to him. I've heard it all before. I want something more practical. So, in this way, these lumps in the heart become bigger and bigger. This starts off unconsciously. Just think about it. You have some resentment. I wanted to do a certain service. Yeah, I wasn't wanting to do something for myself. I wanted to do a certain service, and I was stopped. What could be more ridiculous than that? I wanted to do a certain service for Krishna, and I was stopped. I was prevented. Therefore, I have to show my hostility. I'll just withdraw myself. I won't do any service. There. I'll fix you. Now, we don't think directly that we're having an attitude toward Krishna, but actually deep down inside we are. There's a lump in the heart that disturbs the relationship. Those of you who are married, you know how difficult it is to live with someone who's harboring some resentment for something you did 10 or 20 years ago. It's very difficult. Because it's natural, the human being wants, you know, clear relationships. Relationships that just flow without any impediment. Because you remember your relationship with Krishna. Now, relationships, unless they firmly have Krishna in the center, relationships in the material world are always going to have these bumps and problems and impediments. But still, in your heart, you're hankering for that pure, flowing relationship without any impediments. So, if there is some resentment in the heart, it'll be very difficult for you to live with that person who has that resentment. You feel actually insulted by it. Why can't you just get over it? Why can't you let the past be the past and just let everything flow naturally? You resent those lumps in the heart. You think, I'm spending all my time with this person. Why can't you at least have the decency to have a soft heart? But what happens when we deal with Krishna? We forget all about what we would want for ourselves. We'd want a pure relationship, devoid of resentment, devoid of any anger. And when we turn to Krishna, consciously or unconsciously, we have these hard spots, these lumps in our heart. Resentment. I was serving Krishna and this happened. I was serving Krishna and this didn't happen and I wanted it to happen so much. There was a misunderstanding with devotees, or I had to undergo some austerities while doing devotional service. As if there are no austerities when you try to achieve something in the material world. Sometimes we forget, especially those devotees who are full-time staff members of our devotional community. If they have no experience in the working world, they'll not understand that it's such a wonderful, easy life to be fully absorbed in Krishna's service. They don't understand that there's always austerities, no matter what you do in the material world. Whether you serve Maya or you serve Krishna, there are austerities. Now, a main difference is when you serve Maya, the austerities are all for nothing. And when you serve Krishna, the austerities bring you a reward that you cannot measure. Not only later, but also now. You see how you're advancing in Krishna consciousness. As the years, the decades roll by in bhakti, you become more and more thankful. This is more than I thought that would ever happen to me in Krishna consciousness. You just have to put in that time, make a career, as we said before, out of your Krishna consciousness, a lifetime career. So, devotees are not allowed to resort to intoxication. Therefore, they can't use that method for forgetting about the lumps in the heart. Materialists, when they get so angry, when they get so frustrated, when they get so hurt, freely they can take intoxication. Devotees can't do that. So devotees have to deal with these lumps in the heart through natural Krishna conscious methods. You've got to be able to come clean before Krishna, the spiritual master and the Vaishnavas. So when you feel these lumps in the heart, the resentment, this frustration, you stood in my way when I wanted to do something for Krishna. Now, it is true in another context that Srila Prabhupada explained that when you take away a devotee's service, that is like violence. But you have to understand the context of that statement. It doesn't mean any time someone says you can't serve Krishna in a particular way, they're doing violence. No, it's what Prabhupada is trying to show you is that a devotee's service is his life and soul. A devotee can't live without devotional service. Therefore, if suddenly someone wants to take devotional service in general away from you, it's a very aggressive act. That's how important devotional service is to us. So, we have to be able to come clean before the Lord, the spiritual master, and the Vaishnavas. It's very difficult to deal with devotees in the society of devotees when you have these hard spots in your heart. They ruin your day. They ruin your relationships. They ruin your chanting. You become offensive in your chanting because there's this anger deep down inside. Krishna, why didn't this happen? Why didn't you do this or that? You're angry with the devotees. You even become unconsciously angry with your spiritual master or Srila Prabhupada, as if Krishna's greatest devotees have something directly to do with the frustration that you're experiencing because this happened or that happened. Instead, Krishna's dearest devotees are offering us shelter. If we just take that shelter, we'll pass over all these temporary storms. I'll give you an example. It's funny now when I look back at it. It's 30 or more years ago. But when I was a young devotee, this was really intense. Just so you don't think that, you know, I'm just speaking, you know, well, the Maharajas, they can talk like he talks. They don't go through what we go through. I was a young Sankirtan devotee. Bhrigupati was also there in New York City. That meant 7-day-a-week Sankirtan. Did that from the time I joined the temple. And so then it became time for the devotees to start going to Mayapur. This was 75 when all the devotees were starting to descend upon Mayapur for the first time in mass. So in our temple, in New York temple, practically everyone got to go to Mayapur except the Sankirtan devotees. The notion hadn't developed yet that Sankirtan devotees have first priority to go get recharged the Dham. So everyone went except, like 10 Sankirtan devotees. So while we were back at the temple, there was a senior devotee there, and he was preaching to us and inspiring us. So we became very inspired. And then when the leaders came back, the temple leaders came back from Mayapur, this is, please understand, this is like 30 years or more ago. So they said, wait a minute, what's going on since we've been gone? All the Sankirtan devotees are being inspired by such and such person. Oh, this is not proper. And so I was supposed to get second initiation. And so then I was called into the office. Since we've been gone for a month, we've noticed upon our return, the devotees, including you, are, listening to such and such a devotee who we did leave in charge of the temple while we were gone. But you just became too inspired by him. We did leave him in charge, we admit, but you just got a little too close. So, therefore, we have to withhold your Brahman initiation. I was, wow, they're getting in the way of my relationship with Prabhupada. I was smoking. So, then I had to come out to L.A. for BBT. I, right at that time, I was too sick to continue Sankirtan. I came to L.A. to work on the BBT. And so I went to the temple president. I explained my situation. I humbly begged that, I should be getting Brahman initiation. He said, I fully sympathize with you. This wasn't right, what was done to you all there. I understand the circumstances. Don't worry. I'll take care of you. So, great, So then it came time for the yajna. And, I come walking in the temple room. And I realized that there wasn't a place for me at the yajna. So, afterwards, I went to the temple president. What happened? What happened? I was supposed to get my second initiation 4 whole months ago. And now, why didn't you have me there? The young man. Oh my, hurry.
seeing your godbrothers get up on the altar and do puja for Rukmini and Durga days, and you have to wait till the next yajna, which in those days was a yajna every 2 months. But you had to wait 2 whole months for the next yajna. But I remember, Prabhupada came, visited the temple, New Dwarka. So, you know, we all went to the airport to meet him, and I was determined, I'm going to stand right in the front and just, you know, show Prabhupada how destroyed and miserable I am. You know, he'll understand. I'm just going to get right by the door when he comes off, you know, when he gets off the plane and walks in the terminal. I'm going to be right there, you know, a pitiful son crying out to his father. So there I was, you know. Twice it's happened, you know. Everyone else has it, you know. So, you know, I was really worked up. I remember this Prabhupada walked out, you know, just looked at everyone, looked at me, and just whisked ahead, and, you know. And, you know, I was like, then I began to think, hey, you know, maybe I got to mature a bit. Maybe I got to wake up a bit and understand that somehow or other, Prabhupada, his mercy is there. Somehow or other, his support is there. Misunderstandings happen. People naturally forget things in devotional service. Why do I have to take it like it's such a devastation to the extent that I'm going to get lumps in the heart and my whole service becomes impeded? So, as an example, I just wanted to give you that example so you wouldn't think that I was just, you know, speaking from a cloud or something. These things happen, but we've got to be very careful. We're dealing with Krishna, we're dealing with the Vaishnavas, we're dealing with devotional service. We can't take shelter of intoxication. Therefore, we can't forget like materialists forget. We have to learn to forgive and forget as devotees do. That is, with full knowledge of Krishna's protection, of Krishna's reciprocation for our service. Now, sometimes in Krishna Leela, there is apparent intoxication. You all read about in Chaitanya Charitamrita, the intoxicating feeling of love of Krishna. How Lord Chaitanya and his associates are intoxicated by love of Krishna. This shows you that the effects of love of Krishna are so astonishing that your consciousness becomes completely transformed. And generally people relate transformation of consciousness to intoxication, in which you take something and your mind, your consciousness, goes somewhere else completely. So this is indeed the effect of love of Krishna. That's why Kaviraj Goswami uses that expression, intoxicating love of Krishna. Your consciousness one way, and then it becomes another way. This is the natural way of intoxication. This is the most sublime method of intoxication. The various bhavas produced in relation to Krishna. Also, in Vrindavan, everyone knows about Lord Balaram and Varuni. Just like the demons have their liquors and beers, and the demigods have somaras. Vrindavan Dham, Balaram and his associates have Varuni. Now you have to be careful in understanding Balaram's situation with Varuni. First of all, who is Varuni? She's the daughter of Varuna. And she's oozing in Vrindavan Dham in order to directly please the Supreme Personality Godhead. Varuna sent her. Do this seva. Balaram is wandering in the nighttime forest with his associates. You should understand that both Jiva Goswami and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained that Balaram's gopis are different from Krishna's gopis. First of all, they're younger. They were too young to be at Krishna's Rasa Leela. And secondly, they're a different group. Thirdly, Balaram associates with his consorts in a different neck of the woods. He's got his own place. Sri Ram Gut, and that's where he has his dancing with his associates. So Balaram separation he's feeling is so intense that he actually even leaves Krishna in Dwarka and goes to Vrindavan. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes Balaram as Nityananda Sarup. He's the form of eternal bliss, yet he's feeling pain from separation from the Vrishvasis, and he leaves Dwarka to go to Vrindavan, even though Krishna is there. This is the great wonder. Balaram left even Krishna because of pain of separation from the residents of Vrindavan. So with great eagerness and enthusiasm, he goes to Vrindavan. Now you may ask, why didn't Krishna go? Balaram went, what about Krishna? But the acharyas give the explanation. The yadus in Dwarka were very intelligent. They understood, if Krishna goes, he'll never return. He is so bound by the love of the gopis. He's so bound by the love of his mother and father. He'll never come back to Dwarka. We can't let him go. Better let Balaram go. But we know Krishna. He'll become subservient to the pure love and devotional service of the residents of Vrindavan. We know that pure service conquers Krishna. Therefore, we can't let him go. He'll never return. So they let Balaram go, but they wouldn't let Krishna go. Looked at another way, of course, Krishna never leaves Vrindavan. Rupa Goswami makes that point. Krishna never takes one step outside Vrindavan. But he's present there in a different way. He's present there due to the intense feelings of separation of his devotees. They actually feel Krishna more through separation than by meeting him. This is the wonder of pure love of Krishna. This is the real intoxication. So Balaram goes to Vrindavan, and Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, they address him. We have heard that everyone calls you and Krishna Jagadishwara, Lord of the Universe. If you are indeed Lord of the Universe, then why don't you protect your parents? We've heard this, that you're Jagadishwara. So then how could you leave us? Why don't you protect us? Then they pick Balaram up on their laps and they cry over him. Just see, they say, we heard you're Jagadishwara. Now if they actually know Balaram is Jagadishwara, they're not going to pick him up on their lap and cry. They just think, we heard that. If it's true, you should be protecting us. Then they pick him up and cry. Because their Vatsalya frame, their love of Krishna and Balaram, is devoid of any understanding of opulence. And so then there's the questioning by the Vrijvasis. What is Krishna doing? It's very good. He's in Dwarka. He's conquered over his enemies. Very good. Our relatives, the Yadus, are living in a fortified place. Do they ever think about Vrindavan? Do they ever think about their relatives and friends here? And then the young gopis show up. They're smiling. But descriptions are there in the Shastra just for some kind of poetic purpose, in a sense that people ordinarily understand poetry. No, they're there to capture your senses, to revive your spiritual senses. So you should get into it with your senses when you read about the night-blooming lotus flowers with their fragrance, the soft moonlight illuminating the whole forest. These descriptions in the Shastra are the cure for sense gratification in the material sense. By meditating on these descriptions, your senses become purified of their diseased attraction for mundane sense objects. You'll find this happens more and more as your years in devotional service go by. Because you immersed yourself in devotional service with sacrifice, when you read descriptions given in Krishna book and Bhagavatam of the holy dhams, your senses become stimulated. And in this way, you realize, I can never go back to mundane sense gratification. My senses are onto something else far superior. So, Balaram is wandering in the forest, and there's this beautiful fragrance in the air. So Varuni comes. She oozes from a hollow of a particular tree, and her fragrance spreads throughout the whole forest, mixing with the smell of the night-blooming lotuses. And Balaram is he's catching that fragrance, which is now even more maddening because of the presence of Varuni. So he and his associates, they go to the tree, and they drink deeply of the Varuni beverage. And Balaram starts acting as if he were intoxicated. It's not that he is intoxicated. If he were intoxicated, his eyes start to roll. The gopis begin to sing praises, glories of Balaram, and that gives Balaram joy. Not so much the so-called intoxicating effect of the Varuni. No, Balaram is relishing the devotion of the devotees, and his eyes are rolling, but there's no question of any ignorance. There's no question of any mundane effects of intoxication. This is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is relishing the devotion of his devotee. But for the sake of the pastime, not everyone understood this. The river Jamuna didn't understand. Balaram called the Jamuna, come forward, come closer to where I am. I want with my associates that we bathe in you. And what did Kalindi think? She thought, he's drunk. She refused to come. Nowadays, of course, when people are intoxicated, everyone takes it as a heavenly state, and no one minds doing what intoxicated persons say. But Kalindi, he's drunk. I'm going to follow his instruction. But actually, Balaram is not drunk in any kind of mundane way. It's just Leela. He's feeling the love of his devotees. Meanwhile, the demigods are playing music, kettle drums, the demigods are dancing. It's a whole festival. So we have to bear that in mind, that Balaram seems to be intoxicated, but not something, you blocked it. Especially when you get to be an older devotee and someone blocks something you want to do for Prabhupada. Look out.
You never forget. I'll mark it down in my book. I'll get you back. Wait till you come up with some project. I'll fix it.
We got to watch that. And it takes effort. Whether you're a young devotee or an older devotee, watch the lumps in the heart. You'll see that it takes effort to get rid of those lumps. So then you're going to start to think, since it takes so much effort to get rid of the lumps in the heart, why should I let them come in the first place? I'll just have to work to get rid of them. So then you become very conscious. I don't want any more lumps coming to the heart. I've got enough to deal with already from the past. I don't need more work to do. And this is wising up and maturing in Krishna consciousness. I've got enough anarchists to deal with from the past. I don't want to add any more. All right. Maybe there's a misunderstanding. Maybe I was mistreated. Maybe not. Maybe I mistreated. Could happen sometimes. But let me try to think of what is best for Krishna's pleasure. I don't want to create a disturbance to Krishna's service. Therefore, I have to keep my heart free from these lumps. Then I can chant the holy name of the Lord smoothly, freely, and happily, without any resentment that's locked up in my heart against Krishna, the spiritual master, the devotees. Sometimes, unfortunately, devotees let these lumps get so big that they drop their service. They stop chanting. They can't stay peacefully with other devotees. Work his wonders upon you, and you'll stay firmly on the road to intoxicating love of Krishna. So we'll stop here and ask if you have any questions. Mr.
and how, to rectify the situation. Because, I mean, there's different ways you can just, go over there and just punch their lights out. That's one thing you can do. Or you can try to, fight back, fire with fire. If they're going to do that to you, I'm going to do it to you. Or what do you do?
Well, if we weren't older devotees this kind, we could just start our own moth and, forget everybody else, But since we're trying to be humble servants of Prabhupada, we have to learn to deal with those things. As you say, it does happen. The other person may, think that their motives are completely above board and they're doing a service to Srila Prabhupada by impeding you. They probably think that's probably their motive. It's all for Prabhupada. I'll be honest, I've seen it. You know, it's just natural in a society of devotees. I remember one devotee, he was doing everything to stop my little humble attempts to serve. And I saw him, you know, during Prabhupada's Guru Puja, just jumping up and down and Jai Prabhupada, Jai Prabhupada. He had just done a scheme, you know. He just made, you know, did something. And he was... And so here it's like, it can be kind of frightening. But but as you know better than I, you take it in a humble way that, And you're practical about it. Well, I wish this devotee wouldn't do that, but life has to go on. So then you depend on Krishna, that Krishna will give me the intelligence how to go on in spite of this. And certainly, someone like our Srivas Prabhu, he has more than enough experience to know that Krishna will give the sincere devotee all the intelligence so that things go on in spite of such impediments. But yeah, at first it's really intimidating. You know, you're just like, I'm just trying to serve Prabhupada. But it's amazing. The other person thinking, I'm just trying to serve Prabhupada. This devotee doesn't know what he's doing. You know, he's, you know.
Part of that would be that, you know, it's very difficult for us to understand how a devotee is actually trying to function or serve their spiritual master. You know, we can make some speculation, but at the same time, it's very difficult, I think, for us to analyze a devotee and their relationship with their guru and how they're trying to serve their spiritual master. I think that, you know, if a devotee really takes the responsibility for their actions, then they won't tend to always try to correct another devotee or always be trying to second guess a devotee or trying to point out in Shastra, you know, so many discrepancies. And it appears that when someone is finding so many difficulties with someone or if they're actually making a sincere effort to correct that individual, it may mean that they're not very engaged properly. It could mean that they need to be more fully engaged or something.
That's a good point, because the way we should be so busy and feeling the weight of spreading Prabhupada's mission, we don't have much time to, you know, impede someone or, you know, make life miserable for someone, you know? Okay, I don't agree with how you're doing devotional service, but I got too much service of my own to, you know, to really take you on, you know? That's the way it should be. And and once again, if indeed we are sincere, Krishna will give us the intelligence how to go on in spite of these impediments which will arise. I mean, you're reminding me. You read Chaitanya Charitamrita, Prabhupada's coming right out with it in his books. You know, certain people are impeding me. Certain persons are envious. Certain persons are trying to stop the sincere spreading of Krishna consciousness. He puts it right out on the pages. Some of his godbrothers didn't like that. I heard from first-hand experience how some of Prabhupada's godbrothers, one of them considered very illustrious, and he was overheard by one of my godbrothers saying that, you know, they were talking about Chaitanya Charitamrita. You know, he shouldn't have done that. He shouldn't have put those kind of things in the purports. You know, it wasn't right. It wasn't right. I know one devotee who he felt his situation would be better in another moth. And after some years, he asked Guru Prasad Maharaj, can you please send me Chaitanya Charitamrita? I really miss that. I want to read that. And so the Maharaj thought, yeah, okay, he's missing Prabhupada's books. Yeah, I'll send it. But then before he could send it, he got a message. Because this devotee wanted the Chaitanya Charitamrita in digital form, like in the folio, not the book, but the digitized form. He said, oh, and when you send it, just send the verses, don't send the purports. Because, you know, they've got that stuff in the purport, you know. So, So Prabhupada is showing, he's revealing his heart that, you know, all right, you say I'm, you know, Krishna Prastaya Bhutale, so dear to Krishna, but look what I have to go through to serve Krishna. So, in other words, therefore, you all, you know, follow in the footsteps. So, we don't want the lumps to develop in the heart. That's when the intelligence from Krishna starts to become cut off, when our heart becomes hard. A devotee will do anything to keep these, you know, feelings of vengeance, anger, frustration. We don't want it. It takes so much effort to get out. Why let it in the first place? So as we become older devotees, we become more expert in keeping the heart free of those potential hard spots. Maybe when you're a young devotee, what the heck, you know, I hate that devotee, he did this, she did that, you know. But as you become older, you become very careful about that, and you learn how to disagree with some kind of finesse without trying to impede someone. But still, these impediments go, they happen. And yes, as you said so wisely, the natural solution is take responsibility for yourself. I always try, although not successfully all the time, to remember a statement by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, that I see a fault in you because I have it more in me, and therefore I'm the expert in the fault because I have it more in me. Therefore I can see it in you. You make that your mantra and it calms you down. Now notice, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur didn't say that I'm wrong to see any fault in you. Said, oh, I see the fault in you, but let's put the emphasis where it belongs. The reason why I see that little fault in you is because I'm a storehouse, I'm a warehouse of that fault. So therefore, as you say, let me take responsibility for me, because I'm the problem. I've got that fault in huge proportions. Therefore, I'm the world's expert in it, and I can see it in you a little bit. This puts the responsibility squarely on your shoulders. So I try to remember that. Not successful all the time, but this is the exciting life of becoming an older devotee. And in this way, you become more sensitive to Krishna, and Krishna reciprocates with you. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.